evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is December 15th, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from a winter wonderland in Montana. I'm surrounded by mountains and wilderness, huge trees, lots of snow, and a roaring fireplace. It's a wonderful place to celebrate Christmas and New Year's and prepare our annual wrap-up. Well, we've decided our holiday contribution. You won't be surprised to know that we're sending our entire donation this year to the Dr. Joseph P. Farrell Virtual Pipe Organ Crowd Fund. We are excited. We've raised $5,000 in our first by the end of our first week, and I hope you will participate. You can learn more by linking to that website from our homepage. It's up on the upper left. Every bit counts, so we want to raise money for the first phase by Joseph's birthday on January 10th. So I would love it if you would come in and participate. It's Give the Gift time. Every subscriber can gift a 3-month Salieri Report subscription to the person of your choice. Just let customer service know if you'd like to participate and who you want to get your complimentary subscription. And also, our prayers for 2017 is available. We're doing our little prayers for the year as our Christmas card. You can link on the website to a PDF or flipbook and obviously print that out. But if you'd like a copy, just let customer service know. And if you want one, we will mail one to you. And this is our last Money in Markets of 2016. For the last 2 weeks of the year, every year during the holiday season, I'm deep in it, working with our team on our annual wrap-up. It's a very immersive process and one I enjoy tremendously. If there are any events that would normally be covered by Money in Markets or you have a lot of questions, I'll either answer questions in the subscriber input area or on the website or do a special recording. We've done 2 special reports already this month. Christmas is a very special time of the year. It's one for celebration and rejuvenation. So I want to make sure tonight that I say thank you on behalf of myself and our team for your support during this remarkable year. That's the only word I can find for it, remarkable. Anyway, I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday. Our theme tonight is listen to the money, don't listen to the noise. There's lots of noise around the Electoral College 3 days from now. On December 19th, the Electoral College will give the necessary majority to Trump. Just ignore all the rest of the noise. The facts are consumer confidence is up since the election. Small business confidence is up a lot since the election. The stock market is up. And the Republican Party, the military, and Wall Street, including Goldman Sachs, are on board and pleased by the transition so far. Only Hollywood, the corporate media, the Washington bureaucracy outside the military, and some intelligence in Silicon Valley are still miffed. Interestingly enough, we saw a significant number of Silicon Valley leaders and CEOs showed up to meet with Trump at Trump Tower this week, and we see Bill Gates in the news likening Trump to JFK publicly. So they seem to be at least towing the line. It is curious what is happening around the noise around the Electoral College. You have a lot of people still in denial about why Clinton lost and really not able to adjust. Part of it was given the presentation in the corporate media, they really didn't consider it a possibility. But there's a more serious aspect among the sort of groups that have been used to make credible the empire model, and that is you have different political and financial interests that are very vested in the empire model, and multiculturalism was their air cover, but there's and that air cover has a lot of misunderstanding, naivete, and entrainment involved. But I assure you, the empire guys know what they're doing, and they have serious problems that continue. A surprising number of the Clinton supporters are turning out to be more intolerant and nasty than the Trump supporters, although the reality is we have too many people on both sides who are not listening and still don't have enough understanding of the phenomena that we're dealing with, particularly on the economic side. It looks like Clinton has no plans to adjust. She just threw a $100,000 dinner at a New York hotel for her staff out of campaign funds. To me, it's another clear indication that money could have been used to help the homeless in New York over Christmas, to help the people in Flint build a new water system. Imagine what it would cost if they had simply gone to a nice New York diner or deli. Anyway, we're in an explosion of accusations and news regarding so-called fake news and alleged Russian hacking of the election, including the WikiLeaks dissemination of DNC and Podesta emails. And I want to talk about that as part of this listen to the money, don't listen to the noise, because this is the part of the noise that gets deeply disturbing and is important to understand. And it goes back to the people who are vested in empire and having difficulty with this. So a former British ambassador this week came out. It's a British ambassador to Uzbekistan, and has stated for the record that he was an intermediary between an insider who leaked the materials from the DNC and Podesta and gave them to WikiLeaks. So he's saying, I gave it to WikiLeaks. I got it from an insider. I was an official intermediary on behalf of WikiLeaks at their request. And none of this came from the Russians. And, of course, we know Assange is always already on the record saying the materials did not come from the Russians. But clearly it came from insiders. But we see the CIA briefing the Intelligence Committee in Congress saying that the Russians hacked the election, and that's, you know, sort of why Trump won. And the reality is, if you look at the news anchors covering this, we see one pretty sensible news anchor say, you know, given what happened on the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you know, the fact that the CIA says they have a secret report that this is true, but they're not going to give us any evidence. You know, frankly, you know, this is wolf. I don't believe them. And we also see other intelligence agencies declining to affirm. So every signal says that it's a bluff, or many signals say that it's a bluff. I give the chances that it's a bluff at about 99%. Now, I truly expect that Russian ISPs were trying to hack every party involved. They're certainly always trying to hack us. But just because something is a Russian ISP has nothing to do with the Russian government necessarily, let alone Putin. Now they're trying to tie this back directly to Putin. Oftentimes when someone in America hacks someone else in America, they use scores of ISPs all over the world. I've described this before. After Russia crashed in the 1990s, there was a lot of software and hardware talent, systems talent in Russia that got networked with U.S. businesses. Simply a lot of talent available, low price, looking for work, desperate for work. So it also doesn't mean that if these groups are being used, that the person financing the hack is coming from Russia. They could be coming as much from here. Newt Gingrich gave an interview about the whole issue of whether or not the Russians had any impact on the election, and gave a very good interview. One of the things he stated was the CIA had no concern about Clinton keeping classified information on an insecure personal server for years. Why are all of a sudden they worried about the DNC? But it does say something about everybody's basic digital security, if this is true. Given that the Clinton campaign had $1.3 billion in funding for the campaign and the DNC had even more, why these groups couldn't have legitimate security seems very odd. And the reality is, if an insider provided the information, no amount of security would protect. So there's been an interesting series of interviews. One I looked at was Sean Hannity interviewed Ann Coulter, who said, this is really remarkable, who said, one of the main proponents of this Russia, I mean, the articles in New York Times and the Washington Post, they're all anonymous sources from the CIA, an agency we really need to get rid of because it is utterly useless and eats up a lot of tax money. It's kind of funny, you know, what's interesting about this quote, and the reason I wanted to read it, is we now have analysts and a whole variety of different people not afraid in the corporate media to say, you know, the CIA lies and it's not credible, and the Washington Times and New York Times is just using that and that's not credible. So it's a remarkable turn of events. Now, the whole thing would be completely ludicrous if it was not for the fact that what is happening reflects a very serious war. So I want to talk about why something that seems ludicrous can be very serious. Number one, as you know, I believe that the Anthony Weiner laptop basically won the presidential election for the Republicans. And I think one of the things that that laptop is involved in is serious pedophilia scandals. There are people who will tell you that the pedophilia problems have reached an epidemic level, and I think that's probably true. If you want to know more about this, I would read the Nick Bryant interview I did in 2012. It's in the archives. It's on the Franklin cover-up, which was a pedophilia scandal that broke in Washington in 1989. If it was that bad, then you can imagine how bad it is now. But, it may be helpful to you. Independent media, part of the problem they have with the scandal is independent media keeps researching and sharing information and is probably getting too close, is my guess, or certainly will get close if they keep going at the current pace. Before Andrew Breitbart, founder of Breitbart News, died, and I happen to believe that death was not natural, he had started to point out different issues around Podesta and pedophilia networks, or so it's interpreted from some of his tweets. And this might help explain the hysteria over Steve Bannon coming into the White House as a chief strategist, because his networks, with Trump having access to the Anthony Weiner laptop, his access into the independent media is quite good. Anyway, so what we're seeing is suddenly major disinformation being dumped on the independent media around this topic, and my guess is it's far from over. At the same time, what I will say is independent media seems to be doing a better job of not getting buried or distracted by it, particularly the independent researchers. And I think that's partly because if you look at what's going on in terms of pedophilia, particularly around the Clinton Foundation and the sort of money flowing through there, the case of Jeffrey Epstein is so well documented, and there are other things that are well documented, and the Podesta emails do raise a lot of questions. So part of their problem is the independent media. The other reality is with Trump and his team having access to that support, presumably from parts of the FBI and NYPD, it gives him a decided advantage, particularly if he and Pence are clean on the score, which it wouldn't surprise me if they were clean on this score. Not everybody's dirty. Anyway, so there's tremendous fear of the disclosure of the scandal, not just because of how shocking it would be to many, many Americans, but it very much compromises the control file system, because pedophilia is one of the things used to create a lot of control files and provide a lot of personnel benefits. And that kind of scandal could compromise the legitimacy of the tax system, of the credit system, and really kill the divide and conquer, so people could really come together. Because one thing everybody shares in America, almost everybody, is love for their kids and grandkids. Now, it's far from Obama and Clinton and the Democrats who are afraid. There are lots of people in Washington on both sides of the aisle that live in terror of this. I ran into this because I believe that the secretary I was working for in the Bush administration when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing was being blackmailed related to the Franklin cover-up. And I told that story quite a while ago in a commentary on the website. And I will put a link. It's called Kemp Cuomo, Pedophilia Kemp Cuomo, It's Hard Out There for a Pimp. And we'll put a link in the subscriber links. But when I saw Kemp being blackmailed, and I believe it was over this, and I was warned by one of my deputies that Kemp was involved in pedophilia, but you'll see the whole story if you read the commentary. I've seen people facing death, and Kemp was much more afraid than that. So this brings real terror to a whole world of people who feel completely empowered to behave in these ways, but are terrified at the thought. You know, it's kind of like a multiple personality disorder that the broad middle class around America should know that they're involved in this. Okay, other issue is empire. The people I suspect who are pushing this have not given up on the empire agenda. Particularly, they don't want it to be so easy for Trump now, with Rex Tillerson coming on board as Secretary of State, to be able to achieve detente with Russia. Remember, they want World War III with Russia. Trump and the Republican team, if you look at what they're doing, seem to be gathering much more into a Judeo-Christian nations first, America first, but then Judeo-Christian nations first, pushing away the Middle East and China, which is a very different picture than the empire and the multicultural empire that that we saw the other group push. Finally, there's an issue of media market share. If you want to know more about the relationship between the CIA and the media, a great place to start is Alexander Cockburn and Jeffrey St. Clair's book, White Out, the CIA Drugs and the Press. But the CIA and their networks for many, many decades have literally controlled a lot of the corporate media, and they have taken the fine art of fake news to a whole new level. The reality is they're losing control. Others are taking that market share away, including using some of their techniques. I'm not saying all the people doing that are necessarily, I have tremendous respect for, but the reality is that their game is diminishing dramatically and really diminished during the last election. Anyway, this threatens their whole position, not to mention their budget in the next administration. So if the president-elect is on the news saying, you know, this is all what the CIA is saying is not true, it's a bunch of buck, that's bad for their budget. And in fact, what we're seeing is normally the CIA would lead the briefings of the president-elect every day before now in the inauguration. The reality is he's only getting a briefing once a week from the CIA, and every other day is being briefed, apparently, the word is, by Booz Allen Hamilton. When asked why he's only being briefed once a week by the CIA, he said, you know, they just repeated what they had to say. It was basically saying it was a waste of his time. So we can see multiple threats coming to the CIA budget is what I'm hearing. Now, this gets serious because the House has now passed H.R. 6393, Intelligence Authorization Act for Fiscal Year 2017. It was passed by a California Republican whose third largest donor was Google, or Google's parent Alphabet. But if you read it, it's designed to counteract fake news coming in from manipulations of people like Russia. The problem is if you look at what is involved with implementation, you're basically talking about giving government major power to essentially, I think, wipe out the First Amendment and free speech. So, and that brings us to the latest news from Facebook, which has announced that they are going to start filtering fake news from their news feed or move it to the bottom. And that's combined with legal problems at Facebook. Apparently, Zuckerberg has worked with the board and re-engineered the capital structure to give him control even if he leaves. I mean, it's incredible, but it's all designed to make sure that Zuckerberg has complete control, and means whoever is controlling Zuckerberg has complete control, and goes back to my belief that Facebook is just a way for the CIA to save money keeping their dossiers on everybody in America and globally updated, not only for free, but make money having everybody update their own dossier. And so basically what we're seeing is we're at a point where this is getting and headed to get to a place where it's so ludicrous. It's extremely important for each one of us to determine who are the honest journalists. And, you know, we're going to have to do this individual by individual, and it's going to have to come down to whether or not we, the people, give our views and hints and pay attention to and subscribe to the people who are honest, or continue to suck into the game of the people who are trying to manipulate and control the news. And so I think there's going to have to be a dramatic action on the market's half. I wanted to mention one other thing about, because my fear on all of this is we're going to start to see serious witch hunting against the independent news, particularly if they use the pedophilia word. it reminds me a little bit like Cotton Mather and the the Salem witch trials. The Salem witch trials, the thing kind of went out of control when Cotton Mather agreed that spectral evidence could be submitted. Spectral evidence is very much like what the CIA is doing with their secret decision, their secret study, their secret evidence that we can't know. Spectral evidence was if I say that your ghost was in my bedroom on Saturday night and got me to kill my husband, then you have to prove that your ghost wasn't in my bedroom. And if you can't prove that your ghost wasn't in my bedroom, then you can be found guilty of being a witch. And the way you could prove you weren't a witch was if you were dunked underwater for, you know, more than you could hold your breath and died, then you weren't a witch. So that's spectral evidence. And what we're watching is the beginning of the potential for a lot of spectral evidence to be used and thrown around. I know because I used to have to disprove spectral evidence for 11 years straight. It was quite interesting when we finally got to trial. After the first day, my attorney turned to me in shock and he said, "Oh my God, they have nothing." I said, "I've been telling you that for 8 years. They have nothing." He said, "It was all a bluff." Problem is, these guys, when they bluff, they just keep doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. You know, and if they can make you spend 11 years and $6 million to prove that they're just bluffing, you know, not everybody has 11 years and $6 million to do that. I will say one thing. After America lost $6 trillion, 4,500 American soldiers, 32,000 wounded, and millions of Iraqis and people in the Middle East destroyed or killed after, you know, not to mention all the people destroyed and killed in Haiti and Libya and in many, many places around the world. After watching all of that, I think America is getting much more immune to the lies. The result of all of this is what we're seeing is a massive increase in the interest in decentralization and getting something done locally. Washington, Wall Street, the pro-centralization team is getting a lot less fashionable. The reality is if the new administration is going to get the tax rate lowered and start bringing money in, there's a lot of opportunity locally, particularly now with the debt growth model over money back to real. So whether you're smelling opportunity or the pro-centralization team is looking a lot less fashionable and attractive, don't be surprised to see a lot more interest in decentralization. So again, our theme was look at the money, not the noise. So don't pay attention to all the various noise. The shriekometer is on high volume. Look at the money. And the money says that Trump will be elected in the Electoral College and inaugurated. And there's going to be a lot to rock and roll on. Probably where you live, it's going to be in every county in America. Okay, money and markets. The Federal Reserve, we've all been waiting for it. Sure enough, bumped the federal funds rate 25 basis points. They did the same thing last December, said they were going to do it once a quarter this year. They never did. This is the first bump this year. This is the target rate. The Fed funds rate is the rate that depositories institutions charge each other when they lend their bank reserves to each other, typically overnight. That rate is set by the market, but it's very much influenced by the targeted rate set by the Federal Reserve, and that's what they're bumping 25 basis points. If you look at the market, basis points or interest rates are headed up anyway. The expectation is that this will increase what the banks and credit card companies charge for loans. It's not expected to raise deposits. Remember, because they have the FDIC deposit insurance, it's a bank deposit right now is a very creditworthy, very secure place to put your money. And people who want to avoid losing money if the equity market should turn or as bonds go down are looking to put their fixed income portion and savings in bank deposits. And so they don't need to spend more to attract deposits. They've got your taxpayer credit to do it with. So a lot of this is going to accrue to bank profits. And in fact, we see the regional bank the regional bank ETF up 32%, and some of the other bank stocks are up even more. Well, not surprisingly, when the Fed bumped interest rates, the U.S. dollar index flew up. It's now 103.05, so it's basically up almost 2 points since I talked to you last week. And that has dramatic implications for the economy. It means that everything we import gets cheaper. It makes it much more difficult for American companies that are consolidating earnings back or are trying to export. Fixed income, needless to say, got whacked a bit more. We now see the long treasury, which was up as high as 20% for the year, is now down a half a point. The intermediate ETF is down 40 basis points, so almost a half. The bond aggregate, corporate bonds, doing better than treasuries and municipals, is still up 1.3%. Junk, who knows, is still flying at 13.26. Go figure. I can't figure it out. Equities, the S&P now up 12.98%, which is more than gold. I told you that I thought every effort was going to make sure that the U.S. domestic equities outperform the emerging markets in gold. And sure enough, the emerging markets are up 10.55%. And gold got hit hard as a result of the U.S. dollar index flying up. It's trading right now at 11:30, so it's up 5.8% for the year. So U.S. equities look like they're going to close at 12:31. They're going to outperform both emerging markets and equities, and certainly Europe. Europe down 2% now, the broad ETF VGK. Germany up 1.77%. Developed markets less. North America up 1%. China up 1.33%. But if China gets in a dollar rally, it could get in a dollar bear trap, and we could see that head down. I think it makes China weak. And then the China small caps down 4.43% for the year. Commodities now up 8.06%. Oil still down for the year. It's at 1.77, but I think we're going to see the oil and gas business certainly have a lot more activity in North America. So, and as I said, gold up 580 for the year. Silver, which was up as high as 40% for the year, now up 15.09%. It wouldn't surprise me to see that come underneath U.S. equities, so come down a little bit more. We have done two special reports in the last 2 weeks, one that we published this week, one last week, and that's because I've gotten an enormous number of questions and interest in what is happening in the transition in Washington. We did the Trump transition with Dr. Joseph Farrell last week, and then this week we published Can America Be Great Again? Framing the Vision with John Rappaport. What I discovered, I wanted to do one with John called Memos to Ben, where I laid out what Ben Carson should do going into HUD, and it also was good general background for anybody going in as a cabinet secretary. What I discovered in my pre-interview with John was all the terms I was using to describe the economic issues of what is going on in America right now. It's more than just the election. It's what happens when the debt growth model is over. John made it very clear, you know, your audience doesn't understand the terms you're using, and so they can't get the framework you're trying to communicate. So I said, okay, John, would you get on and help me record this? Because it's very important that these concepts get communicated so as people watch these changes, they understand what's going on and they know how to think about it. One of my chief concerns is it's absolutely imperative that independent media be in a position to really understand and hold or bring accountability to the process. So when I describe in both special reports, both with Dr. Farrell and with John, I describe the establishment in three groups. One I call the Titanic Turners, which are the people who say, come on, we can turn the Titanic in time, and we're here to lead and help you do it. And the other group, another group called Scaredy Cats, are like, no, let's just get in our lifeboats and run away because we don't want to be on the Titanic when it goes down. And then the third group's called the Pigs, which are saying, hey, let's rape the place. Let's steal everything. And it's very important, I believe, that independent media help and support the Titanic Turners, hold them accountable, yes, but make sure that they're successful, do everything they can to make life hell for the pigs so they don't get away with anything, which makes life much easier for the Titanic Turners, and then encourages the security cats to get back on the Titanic and help everybody turn it. Anyway, and so it's extremely important to me that independent media have what they need to tell the difference between who's who and what the behavior is, and be able to make a very important contribution to the Titanic turning, because among other things, most people's retirement benefits depend on that being successful. Anyway, so I really recommend those to you. The John Rappaport special report is public, so you can share that beyond the subscription, but beyond the subscribers, you can share that with everybody. And I think it helps everybody understand how to view what's going on and how to kind of assess and follow. A new broadcast from John Williams at Shadow Stats today. I've been saying that inflation is running at about 7% based on my assessment, but also the writings of Charles Hugh Smith, who we had on the Salieri Report this year. He's been estimating about 7%. It's clearly kicking up. Shadow Stats now estimates it's running at 9.4% annually, which is very possible. And so I think that if I could encourage you to really do one thing, it's make sure next year you're prepared to deal with greater inflation. You want that to be one of your scenarios. When the annual report publishes in January, we will have our scenarios for 2017. One of the things we're going to consider is the possibility of greater inflation, what that could mean. But I really want you to be thinking about how you're going to be prepared, and greater inflation is not going to pinch you in 2017. You're going to be ready for it. We did a great Salieri report last week with Patty Kemmerer on tax issues, and I want to also stress, among other things, the FBAR and FinCEN filing if you have accounts outside of the country, including gold deposits outside of the country. That moves to April 15th, and there's a lot of other good information in that Salieri report as well. Our hero this week is all the different journalists, and there are very many. You see or hear a lot of them on the Salieri Reporter. We post their work. They're just a tremendous amount of journalists who work very hard to get the facts, to not sensationalize and not exaggerate, and truly help their audience, really committed to getting the truth to their audience. There are lots of them. Some of them you think of as, and they're all over the world. And some of them you may think of as on the right side of the spectrum or the left side of the spectrum. But the reality is they're all over. They're in the corporate media. They're in the independent media. And to a certain extent, we're going to have to take responsibility. And the key thing is going to be, do we listen to them and support them as opposed to the shriek-o-meters or the folks who are guilty of major material omissions? There's a great line from Jim Brown in an interview with CNN this week. Anderson Cooper was trying to get him to whine about race. He wouldn't. He said, look, I can vote. I can invest my money. I can invest my time. Basically, what he was saying is we all determine what happens in the way that we vote, the way we invest our money, and the way we invest our time. It was a beautiful comment by a very great man, quite inspiring. Let's Go to the Movies is a wonderful movie it's one of my old favorites. It's called The Ramen Girl. It's a comedy, but a serious one, but very fun. It's about an American who goes to Japan to be with her boyfriend, breaks up with her boyfriend, and decides to learn how to cook ramen, which is a kind of Japanese noodle soup. And it explores the relationship between great cuisine and the intention and spirit of the chef. She trains with a Japanese chef, a remarkable man who's totally committed to the spiritual nature of the chef, the preparation, the food, and it really speaks to the power and importance of the spirit of tradition and tradition in food and the spiritual aspect of food, which I think is exceptionally important. And it's one of the keys to our interview tonight with Harry Blaser on the culinary history of Christmas. To prepare, I read 3 books and countless materials online about the culinary history of Christmas, and it was, I have to tell you, it was a delightful experience. It was a lot of fun. And I don't begin to touch Harry's history. He's run major food operations for many, many decades. And, of course, their busiest time of year is, he says, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So he has spent a lifetime trying to delight people at this time of year and knows much more about it than I do. But I learned a lot, and it turned out to be a fascinating discussion. And I wanted to do this because I believe that one of the things that makes us powerful is to know our history, to understand our culture. One of the things that came out in the interview was so many of the things which are, you know, Christmas, and you go back even before to the Roman and the pagan holidays, which the Christians lobbed onto, is really a time of celebration, rejuvenation, restoration. You're in the darkest period of the year, the shortest time of the year in terms of sunlight. And it's part of preparing you, rejuvenating you, restoring you to go through the long winter. And one of the things you celebrate in Christmas is family, community, and our humanity, and the wonderfulness of being human. And it was very interesting. At one point when we were preparing this, Harry said, you know, you celebrate at Christmas all the things that have been attacked all year long. And it really struck a chord in me. And so when you sit down for Christmas dinner, I want you to know the remarkable history of all the different foods that you're eating and how we have had centuries of ancestors contribute to event, evolve, pass these traditions all over the world. It's very, very remarkable. When I used to live in New York, one of the things I talk about in the interview is how when I was in New York would celebrate so many distinct ethnic groups at Christmas time. The food selection at Christmas was just amazing. But as you learn more about it, you realize, oh, we've had millions and millions of ancestors and entrepreneurs working throughout the centuries to fill our Christmas plate with delight and do it on a much more economic basis than used to happen. So I hope you enjoy our interview. It's another one in the food series, which is one of the great things we started in 2016 and will continue in 2017. Ask Catherine. Somebody sent a link about a town in Indiana where the entire police force quit, and the police chief is now suing the city council. And all I have to say is, right on. You know, sounds like a group of very fine people who did the right thing. Very interesting. It's posted on Top Picks. Hello, Catherine. I just finished watching Sheriff, I can never pronounce his name, it's the sheriff from Sheriff Joe from Arizona. His live broadcast of his investigation of the Obama birth certificate. He's been investigating the validity of this document for 5 years. He and his team of forensic scientists have concluded that the certificate posted on the White House website is a forgery. The evidence is compelling and comes from several different unrelated sources. Sheriff Joe says he will submit his findings to Congress for follow-up. In your opinion, what will Congress likely do about this? I would say that Sheriff Joe's conclusion is probably true. I've never spent a lot of time on this, but when I did, I assume it's probably true. I think the reason Trump backed down on this issue was because it was not worth spending the political capital. It wasn't one he was going to win, and it would waste a lot of political capital. I don't think Congress is going to do anything. They've been complicit in this for 8 years, and now that they have, I think they're not going to. And I think a lot of the people in Congress who might be interested in doing it are feeling that they'd rather use their political capital to get a change in the tax rate or other things. If you look at Ryan and McConnell's response to Russian hacking, they basically came out and pulled the rug right out of the president-elect's statement that it was all ya-ya. I think in part they did that because they wanted to make sure that the Republicans sail through the Electoral College and the inauguration, and they understand how dangerous the game is. And there's also an awful lot of people in Congress who are probably compromised in a variety of different ways, and they understand that. So if I'm right, I think, oh, so the person goes on, Am I right in believing that if it's true, all of Obama's appointments, laws, treaties, and regulations will be null and void, or at least rescinded? I've never looked into the legal ramifications. I don't know. And I just think the chances of it happening are remote. Are you concerned for the safety of the Electoral College representatives? No, I'm not concerned. I think they're going to be treated to a lot of noise, but I don't think anything physically violent is going to happen. I read that they're being victimized and threatened by the rabid right. I think you mean the rabid left. From what I've read about the sort of targeting of the people in the Electoral College, I think it's the rabid left. I thought their identity was a secret. No, their identity is public. What can account for the lawlessness and strident reaction of the disappointed Democrats? Some of my family will not speak to me because I suggested that Trump might not be as bad as they think. I think you had a lot of folks on within the, and I would differentiate between the group that supported Sanders and the group that supported Clinton, but you had a lot of people who had really been encouraged to care about a whole lot of issues which were not the real deep state issues going on behind the scenes. So we're deeply into different of the multicultural issues as opposed to the game of empire that was really going on. I think the reason you're seeing, and I think there was a lot of entrainment on both sides, but that side certainly consumed a lot. And because they'd been led to believe that they were going to win, you know, they didn't have an option in their mind of how to function if they lost. They haven't seemed to adjust. And I think the Democrats have encouraged them because they want to keep people working on their side. They don't want to lose them because basically they really handled the election from a political standpoint in a very incompetent way. But I also think it's a very serious issue. The people who want empire have big money up, have a lot at stake, so they're going to do everything they can to see if they can't punch through the wall, which I don't think they're going to be able to do because the money is just going in the opposite direction. Anyway, so then they continue, I hope your Christmas is especially wonderful. Well, if the last couple days is any indication, it's going to be a fabulous Christmas. You're a beacon of light in a confusing and sometimes frightening world. Keep up the great work, and I know that I'm cheering for you all the way, looking forward to an exciting and inspiring new year. Yes, I'm really looking forward to 2017, although I think it's going to be a transition year, so there's going to be a lot of different rocky periods. God bless you and all the Soleri team. Yes, God bless the Soleri team. We have a tiny little team. They do a great job. I just terminated my Facebook account. I cannot abide the idea that Mark Zuckerberg is going to tell me what fake news is and what it isn't. Yahoo! I want everybody to go out and do that. Just dump Facebook. I'm not on Facebook. I made the mistake of letting a subscriber persuade me I should get on years ago. I got up to 1,200 friends on Facebook, and I don't know, it was a very short period, and then they hacked me badly, and I said, nope. I'm not going to create a honey trap for good people. So off I went. I haven't been back since. Catherine, a friend sent me this, and it seems to make sense, but you know the players see what you think. It's called the Rothschilds caught orchestrating the U.S. election. It's way oversimplified. You know, just please listen to the Trump transition, then listen to the Rappaport, but it's way oversimplified. Not to say that the Rothschilds aren't extremely powerful. They are. Hi, Catherine. A few weeks ago, you tweeted something about possible danger coming to the HUD building in D.C. Can you provide further details? What if we know innocent people who work there? Is there any advice we could give them? Yes, yeah, stay away from databases that have data about a lot of fraud. Be careful. Also, Trump's landing team at HUD includes Jimmy Kemp, the son of Jack Kemp, and Sean Krause, an executive vice president at Quicken Loans. I've never due diligence Quicken Loans, but from what I know of them, they get good marks, so I wouldn't worry so much about that. If Ben Carson is confirmed as the HUD secretary, and if Kemp and Krause stay on to work with Carson, what kind of HUD policy changes do you foresee as likely? That's an excellent question, and I'm glad you asked it. What I'm planning on doing, and it may take until after the wrap-up, is to do something called Memos to Ben, to talk about this, but I would recommend you listen to that interview with John Rappaport because As I said, I was going to start on memos to Ben with John, and he said, no, back up. You've got to give us a 101 in the basic economics of what is facing the federal government and how we need to think about it and hold them accountable. Dear Catherine, I read Salieri interview guest David Talbot's book, The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, The CIA and the Rise of America's Secret Government, and I found it to be an amazing book. Perfect word. Amazing book. In my opinion, it is the best book on the Kennedy assassination ever. So many of us have been putting together the pieces of the puzzle around why we have the kind of government that we have today here in the U.S., understanding that so much has been going on covertly. And then there's the official story that the media has always been telling us, too. But this book shows us the entire history of covert operations here in the U.S. Actually, it goes back further and it's deeper, but you're right. It certainly gives you the history from the point it starts. And shows us how the people controlling these operations can do anything they want to, kill anyone they want to, invade any country for the U.S. business interests that they want to. And all the while, the media here will be silent on all of this or convince us that it's all really necessary in the best interests of democracy. It's a great book for weaving together the entire thread of so many of the things that we've learned, along with teaching us new things that we haven't learned. And I thank you for recommending it. Well, I'm very glad. I'll give you a sneak preview. Next week, we're publishing the editor picks for the top picks of the Salieri Report of 2016. One of them will be our interview with David Talbot on his book, The Devil's Chessboard. And I have to tell you, if you want to understand the economy in the United States of America or the politics, that book is, along with my constant recommendation of Sir James Goldsmith's 1994 Globalization Warning, I think The Devil's Chessboard is a absolutely must read, and it will be on our list of books to read in 2017. The one thing I say is, you talk about they can keep the media silent. One thing that we may be seeing is that monopoly may be breaking down, and that's why we see so much hysteria and hysterical stories and spectral evidence of, Mommy, Mommy, the Russians did it. Anyway, dear Catherine, since the people of India have traditionally liked to buy and own gold, what impact, if any, would you expect the current and ongoing confiscation of gold in India to have on gold's price? Very chilling. And it's one I'm watching closely. I'm extremely concerned about this because if you basically shut retail buying off in Asia, whether India or China, you could be talking about giving the central banks a monopoly, and that's going to be very depressing on the retail price. Hi, Catherine. I recently enjoyed your talk with Patty Kramer. Very insightful and informative. I was wondering if you could specifically weigh in on the budget revenue side of the tax plans. How do Trump and or the Republicans massively cut taxes and avoid ballooning the deficit and debt in a rising rate environment? They can't. Even without funding a $1 trillion infrastructure program, the debt projections under his plan are concerning. Is there any productivity growth potential to make up that quickly? The Republicans need to build credibility on this. Both Reagan and Bush, too, came into office and cut taxes, kept on spending, and left us deep in the red compared to when they entered. Please see interview below with Rand Paul, representing the fiscally conservative mantra. Here's my concern. We always can print money when the banks want money. We can't print it when, the basic economy needs investment. The important thing when you invest is, are you generating more economic wealth than what you're paying for the way that you're financing it? And my concern is, too deeply conservative approach basically says, okay, instead of having private money come in and reinvest, we're going to do prioritization, which is we're going to say, okay, because we have a lot of debt, we can't afford to have government do everything. The private guys have to do everything, and then they get away with murder and the pigs take control. And I'm going to be talking a lot more about that in the wrap-up and next year. So again, I would really encourage you to listen to the interview I did with John Rappaport, because we get into all these issues. But it's an excellent question, because that's the issue. How does government fund this, and how do we make sure that this is done in the best interests of all concerned, not just in the best interests of the private guys who have money to bring to the table, including the people who stole the money from the U.S. federal government? To a certain extent, we're watching money cycling back that, in my opinion, was stolen. Wishing you safe travels to Montana. These are on my bucket list, and maybe you're passing through Whitefish or Missoula and want a good brunch. And they point out Bernice's Bakery in Missoula and Lula's Cafe in Whitefish. I think I've eaten at Lula's Cafe. It's wonderful. Bravo, Catherine, for your discussion you and Joseph Farrell had on how Trump might go about establishing an equity-based rather than a debt-based economy. I found it creative, insightful, and helpful for me to better understand the myriad forces he and we must contend with. I especially value your insistence that somehow we must establish open and honest dialogue if we are to succeed after generations of talk radio, what about listen radio, and mainstream planted memes. We've become divided into self-interest groups or turned off from public process, except for the millions of folks who seek out information from sites such as yours and are ready and willing to become Titanic tourists. So how do we connect, communicate, and focus to recreate a public commons? Great idea. Great question. Clearly, we can't depend on mainstream media, nor are thousands of informative blogs and websites likely to do the job so long as they address only their identified audiences. Look like it falls to the Titanators and their wannabes to create ways to get the job done. Some brainstorming. Find a short name for the grassroots movement to create meaningful, productive dialogue. Let's have more local town hall meetings in Chautauquas to define local needs and priorities. I'm a big believer in Chautauquas. It was now it came out of Chautauqua, New York, but Chautauquas were groups of people who went strung out from town to town, who would lead conversations, do lectures, and have big, you know, base ongoing conversations at the grassroots level about how are we going to reinvent things. And I always, you know, we had started at Hamilton Securities to plan to essentially do Chautauquas that would include musicians and artists. Think of it as a revival, but our way of figuring out how we were going to reinvent our world and reinvent our economy was, you know, it was going to be more like a Shakespearean troupe and comedy shows and a much more interesting, fun way of having the conversation. And then they said seek out millennials a lot of other good ideas. I sent a very detailed answer back to this particular person who has a lot of deep knowledge and success in the independent media world. So I'm hoping maybe we can inspire some dialogue. And they're in New Mexico, and I'm hoping to be in New Mexico in late July. So maybe we'll do something in cahoots. Dear Catherine, I've been a Solaria subscriber for 1 year now. This is a thank you note. I would so much rather face the truth of the situation, whatever that truth is, and no matter how difficult, than to experience the confusion and bewilderment of trying to function in a sea of lies. Amen to that. Thank you for telling the truth as best you can know it. Equally important, I bask in the warmth of your spirit, and I feel comforted every time I hear your voice. You sparkle and shine in the face of darkness and inspire me to do the same. Thank you for that. Well, thank you for the thank you note. That really cheered up the Solaria team. I wish you a blessed Christmas and a wonderful 2017. Happy to be in cahoots with you. Okay, Catherine. A few months ago, you seemed very concerned about negative interest rates, encouraged subscribers to transition from money market accounts to things like municipal bonds. In light of what has happened in the equity and bond markets since the presidential election, the strengthening U.S. dollar, are you still as concerned about the specter of negative interest rates? No, but I am still concerned about the credit problems on the turn in the debt market. And to the extent that you have fixed income positions, I think you want to be in very high-quality individual bonds more than mutual funds. There's some mutual funds that I think can handle the turn, but I think you have to be very careful. Thank you. Keep up the good work. And I love Solaria's book reviews. Dear friends, something curious happened when I learned that the president of ExxonMobil is set to be our Secretary of State. I actually felt a rush of hope and confidence, especially when I looked at the photo of the man. This is good and not so good. So then they continue with a very long comment and question. And again, what I would say is please listen to Trump Transition. And then Can We Make America Great Again with John Rappaport. It was a major investment for the Solaria team and Dr. Farrell and John Rappaport to turn around and suddenly record 3 hours, 4 hours of content about what is happening in the middle of the holidays. But we felt it was so important that you had answers to all these questions that we didn't. And I would really encourage you to take a listen to it because they, you know, it was a deep and very great conversation. And I think it can help clear out a lot of, or answer a lot of questions and really help you sort of watch sort of what's going on over the next 100 days. Okay, that's it in closing. Next week, we have the best of the Solari Report 2016. The Solari Time and our extended network spent a lot of time picking out what we thought, not including the wrap-ups and not including the regulars. So we wanted to say, what are the Solari Reports outside the wrap-ups and the regulars where there were unbelievable gems? We want to make sure we highlight those to you and you get a chance to listen to them before the year is out, and they are extremely pertinent to what is going on in 2017 and how you can protect yourself and your family and those you love. December 29th, the best of the archives, the best of the Solari Report. Now we're pulling from all years, and I'm going to choose the ones I think will be most helpful to inspire you to come up with the best New Year's resolutions and make sure you make them powerful. So next week, best of the Solari Report editor picks and material very pertinent to 2017. And then December 29th, making your New Year's resolutions powerful, the best of the Solari Report. So my picks for those things that will really inspire you and help you make 2017 a very productive year. And then January 5th, it begins the annual wrap-up. And we'll start with News, Trends, and Stories Part 1, the following week Part 2, with Dr. Joseph Farrell, a complete wrap-up of the news, and there is a lot to talk about, so it's going to be particularly juicy. Until January 5th, again, no money in markets December 22nd or 29th, unless I jump on and do a special report if something happens, which I think we need to talk about. And feel free until then to post your questions, subscriber input. I'll try and answer them as best I can. Until January 5th, when we begin our annual wrap-up, I wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year's, and Happy Holidays. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, as you're working on your New Year's resolutions, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, please consider starting one in 2017. Good night and good luck.